And we look around us in our world and in our lives and say, Lord, what are you doing? This doesn't make any sense at all. This isn't comfortable for me to have to go through, Lord. Don't you understand? And we can look in our world at all the things that are going on, and it can get pretty scary. We can literally feel like many times our country's falling apart and the world is falling apart. And we're prepped to believe the worst, and the media always gives us the worst. And we can become disillusioned, and we can lose our hope. Well, again, that's not a common theme to our own world today, folks. This was a problem all the way back from the beginning of time, and certainly in the Old Testament. And so we want to turn back to Habakkuk as we study again from this book that sometimes even gets overlooked in our Bibles. And yet is such an important message for us to consider. Because really, this prophet, again, his name is Habakkuk. That means embrace, or I think in English, hug. Maybe he was a guy that was a real people person. But it does mean in the Hebrew, embrace. And I think if we can learn any from that, is that Habakkuk had a love for people, and he had a concern for people. Oh, as well, we do have a children's church, so you can go back. Thanks for that reminder. We didn't have it last week, but we do have it this week. So we're thankful for Tammy's being willing to do that. So a number of our kids are sick today, but we hope they get better for tonight for the family fun night that we're going to be enjoying. All right. But back to the passage here, now that I'm not distracted anymore. Habakkuk struggled with these same things. He would see the contradiction, it seemed, of God's justice. And yet he knew, let's be clear again what Habakkuk knew. He knew God well. He knew his theology well. We could say today he knew his Bible very well. He knew what God said about his character and who he was. And yet he would look around at the violent goings on in his world. And he would look at the sinful state of his own people. And Habakkuk had questions. And questions come to us as well. We look around in our world and in our country, and we look around in Christendom and maybe even our own church, and we say, why, Lord? And so we start to wonder, you know, is it okay? I'm having these questions. Is it even right to question God? Isn't that disrespectful or dishonoring to him? And so we set up this framework last week because that's exactly what Habakkuk does. This prophetic book, considered a minor prophet book only because it's a small book. It's different in the fact that instead of the prophet going and proclaiming God's word to the people, the prophet has his own questions, and he knows they're the questions of his people, so he's taking the questions that he and his people have, and he's giving them to God. So if this prophet is able to do that, then it does seem to make sense that God would expect that we could come to him with our questions too. But we want to provide some framework again for that. Because we want to be careful as we come to God, certainly to honor him and yet be honest with him. Because again, let's be candid, doesn't he already know all the questions in our heart? We're not telling God anything new. God, here's a bulletin, news bulletin, something brand new. You haven't heard this in my life yet, and I want to explain it to you. No, he already knows the struggles in the situations that we're facing. He already knows the discontent and the complaining in our hearts. So really the questioning, if you want to put it that way, of God, is really just us being honest with him. Habakkuk's just being honest with God. He's being careful. There might be a couple times where he gets close to the line, as Job did, as far as being respectful. But he's careful to honor God. And really, in his questions, he's saying, I know you, God. I know what you, the word, and you, what the word says about your character, what you've said about your character, but I am not feeling this. My experience doesn't match up with what I know. Why is that, God? And another thing that as we ask these questions, we need to be ready for is that God can give us any response that he desires. And the response today that God gives Habakkuk is one that Habakkuk is not going to expect in any way. And so, folks, we have to be, if we're bold enough to ask God the questions, we have to be ready for the answers that may not fit what we want to hear from God, that may not fit our comfortable framework. God, you need to do this so that I can understand things and be comfortable. And God may very well say, well, I'm doing something, but it's not something that's going to make you comfortable. Today's answer, as we look in Habakkuk further in chapter 1, it's certainly not going to make Habakkuk comfortable. But in the midst of this, a third aspect of this is that we must, when God reveals his character and what he's doing, sometimes he will reveal it to us, sometimes he won't. Sometimes he'll just say, wait. But whatever his response to our questions, we need to be ready to trust the answer that he gives us. Does that make sense? We need to have hearts that are ready not to blame. How dare you do this, God? How could you do that? But Lord, you gave me an answer. I have a better understanding in this question. And now I trust you. That's what we just sang. Lord, whatever happens to me, I trust you are still always good. That takes strength of relationship, folks, and strength of faith. Sometimes we just need to pray, Lord, strengthen my faith. Because right now I'm at the end of it. And I don't know if I can hang on. And we need the reminder, God, you are always good in all that you do. Habakkuk had the same frustrations that we have, but he voices his concerns directly to God. And the answer that we see today would be different from this prophet's expectations. In fact, it would be rather kind of a shock and awe experience to Habakkuk and to the nation, because Habakkuk would give then eventually this message to the nation and to us. And God is going to be clear as Habakkuk looked in the first couple verses as we read. Let's go ahead and just read those together real quickly from chapter 1. The oracle, that's the burden that Habakkuk the prophet saw. He looked all around him and he was despair and frustrating. Oh Lord, how long shall I cry for help and you will not hear? Or cry to you violence and you will not save? Why do you make me see iniquity and why do you idly look at wrong? Destruction and violence are before me. Strife and contention arise, so the law is paralyzed and justice never goes forth. For the wicked surround the righteous, so justice goes forth perverted. In that last verse, he is literally saying, Lord, it seems as if that your law and your word is ineffective because people get away with sin. How can that be? It's like the people that really need your justice never seem to get it, Lord. Have you ever been driving? And of course, I would expect that you're following the speed limit on the highways and different things, but you have somebody zip around you and they just speed off. Maybe it's a busy highway and you know that if they're not stopped, they could cause damage to you or to someone else. And the first thing you think of many times, at least I do, where's the police officer? Those guys, and maybe if you're really sanctified, I think once or twice I've even prayed, Lord, provide justice for them soon. Because I want to see as I'm continue driving, I want to see that car pulled over, the blinking red lights behind them. I want the whole experience of seeing that. Justice going forth. And so many times, it doesn't seem like that's what happens. And so Habakkuk says, it just seems like the wicked get away with surrounding the righteous. And that justice is strained, that it's perverted. And many times, I think what Habakkuk's also saying here, it seems like justice is on the side of the wrongdoers. You ever feel like that today? Seems like those that are not following God get justice on their side. That's twisted. That's not right, God. How can you let this happen? And God then mercifully responds to Habakkuk, and he says, again, look at verse 8, look among the nations. Okay, Habakkuk is looking, and he's telling God what he sees. And now God is saying, now you look with spiritual eyes, Habakkuk, and see what I see for a minute. Look among the nations and see, and you wonder and be astounded. For I am doing a work in your days that you would not believe if told. I'm bringing shock and awe to the situation you described, Habakkuk. Get ready. It's going to be swift and powerful. My judgment will come, but it's in my time frame, not yours. And one of the things Habakkuk then needed to do was to adjust his expectations to God's time frame instead of demanding God do things in his time schedule. So often we can get caught up in that. God, why are you not doing this? I see in my wisdom and my how many ever years of existence that this is how things should be done. This makes sense to me. So why aren't you doing them my way, God? And God reminds us this morning, he says, look, remember who I am. Remember that things go in my time frame, in my schedule, and not yours. It's an important lesson. And so today we're going to see God says, look and be astounded. Be amazed at my power, at my sovereignty, and my plan. Be astounded at the swiftness of God's work. God's work would literally surprise his people as he calls Habakkuk and the nation of Judah to look and see what he was about to do as he's now revealing to them a little bit of what their future holds. And he says, you will marvel. That's the idea of wonder. And you will be amazed. This will be jaw-dropping for you, Habakkuk, and the nation of Judah. Now remember, at this time frame, the only part of Israel that was left was the southern part, the southern nation of Judah. God had already dealt with the northern kingdom of Israel. A mighty, cruel people called the Assyrians literally swept in and dispersed the northern kingdom of Israel to all parts of the known world at that point. I mean, God in a moment acted and that nation was gone. God says, now I'm about to act again. Because Judah, even though it had some good kings that trusted God, it had recently more bad kings than good, and some terrible things were happening. Probably the king that Habakkuk was under at this time, as he's writing this, he probably saw one of his prophet friends killed by that king. And sin reigned and idol worship reigned. And so God says, oh, Habakkuk, I know about the sin amongst my people. I'm much more aware of it than even you are. And I am going to act. And it will be jaw-dropping. I'm going to edit that from the video later on. Maybe I'll leave it in. I don't know. Jaw-dropping and amazing when you see it happen. For I am doing a work in your days that you would not believe. You would not believe if told. In our modern vernacular, I think he's saying, it's going to blow your mind, Habakkuk, what I'm about to do. And that's why I haven't told you yet, because you can't handle it. Or you couldn't handle it until now. But now I'm going to let you know. And I am going to move swiftly. I am in the process of dealing with my people's sins. And I will judge the wicked. And it will be unprecedented and surprising. And I'm going to use an instrument called the Chaldeans. And we'll talk about the Chaldeans here in just a minute and who they are. But when I move, get ready, it'll be like lightning. Well, I'm sure maybe you've experienced this. We as a family have experienced this recently. Even last year, the beginning of 2023, we were making plans up in New Hampshire. What we were going to do for our little small church ministry up there, Village Chapel Baptist Church, and what God would have us to do. And, you know, even maybe thinking about planning a calendar for the year and all kinds of things. Not going to go through the whole story today. Some of you, a lot of you know parts of it. But we literally, in a matter of a few months, had everything turned upside down. And not necessarily a negative way, but God in the next couple of months moved and made it very clear that our time was done up in New Hampshire and that we were moving back to Upper Crossroads Church in Maryland. Beginning of that year, we had no idea what God had in store for us in that way. And by June, we were back. Back in the, it's almost like Dorothy in the tornado, you know. She returned back and everything's back to normal. And no little red glowing slippers or anything, but God swiftly and quickly moved. And it was just a personal reminder to me as I was studying this. Many times God makes us wait for long periods of time, but then when he acts, many times it is so quick it takes our breath away. And God says, I'm about ready to act in that way now, Habakkuk. It's going to surprise my people, and it will be quickly. But I want to focus on something here. I think it's interesting that God says that this, what he's going to do, look at verse 6, for behold, I am raising up the Chaldeans, that bitter and hasty nation, who march through the breadth of the earth to seize dwellings not their own. I kind of wonder, why would Habakkuk be surprised that God would use an enemy nation for a tool for his judgment, like the Chaldeans? Why would that? Now, he wouldn't look forward to that. He wouldn't appreciate that, certainly. But why would he be surprised by that? God had done that, I mentioned already, in the northern kingdom of Israel with all those wicked kings turning God's people to idol worship. God had wiped out that northern kingdom. Still to this day, those tribes are dispersed throughout the whole world. And he used the tool of the cruel Assyrian nation who became the world power at that point. God used them as a tool to wipe out his people. So why would a group of people, a group of pagan enemy people, God using them to bring judgment, why would that be surprising to Habakkuk? Dismaying, but not surprising. Well, there's a couple ideas here as I studied this. First of all, let's talk about who the Chaldeans are. Now, I know some of you are probably like me, and you enjoy the background of things and a lot of history, and you probably maybe even memorize dates and things, but I also realize that we have some folks in this congregation that just aren't as excited about history and past events. So we need to go through some history, but I'll make this as quick as I can. Okay? Some of my family just this last week had the privilege of being able to go to Sight and Sound and see their current production, Daniel. And one of the aspects of that production, they said it was very good, by the way. One of the main characters was a man named Nebuchadnezzar. You probably remember him. And Nebuchadnezzar was king over the Babylonians, right? And they were, like the Assyrians, a powerful, cruel nation that just swept in and wiped out all of their enemies, and God used them as well. And the neat thing is, throughout that story of Daniel, is Nebuchadnezzar, I believe, eventually comes to a saving knowledge of God and acknowledges God as a sovereign, supreme ruler of all. But really, these Chaldeans are an early version. They are what the Babylonians, they would become the Babylonians and Nebuchadnezzar eventually. This is pre-Babylonian, or Babylon. And so these Chaldeans were becoming stronger, and they were building up, but they might not have seemed a threat to Habakkuk yet. Habakkuk would have known world situations. Probably at that time, if he could have, he would have been one of those believers, one of those pastors that watches Fox News all the time. I mean, Habakkuk would have known modern history and situations, and he probably would have heard the Chaldeans and said, Lord, how are you going to use them? But then as God gives a description of what he's going to do with them, I'm sure that Habakkuk's question turned to horror. Because let's read then. I am raising up the Chaldeans, verse 6, that bitter and hasty nation. He's not saying that the Chaldeans are a bitter and angry people. He's saying that they bring bitterness of heart to their enemies in their cruel ways and intentions. That when the Chaldeans come to town, everyone around them, the enemies, are made, it is a very bitter experience. And also, hasty nation, that they move quickly. God, it continues throughout this to make it clear, Habakkuk, I'm going to move quickly, and these people are going to be my tool. They march through the breadth of the earth. I am going to give them victory over all of the earth. They're going to be the next superpower, Habakkuk, and they're going to seize dwellings that are not their own. They're going to take things and seize people's homes and take things that aren't there, and I'm going to allow them to have victory and do all of that. Now again, Habakkuk would have seen this before as the enemies that took out the northern kingdom of Israel. He would have known about this, but now he's getting kind of an inkling that this could happen to his people. And these Chaldeans, maybe they weren't much at that point by the time Habakkuk is asking these things of God, but God is saying if not, they will become dreaded and fearsome, and their justice and dignity go forth from themselves. That when people hear they are coming, there will be a sickening feeling in their stomachs, that they will dread and be terrorized just by the fact that this enemy would be coming toward them. And they would be feared. They would be shaken in terror and horror and fear that this group of people were coming for them. And that second part of that, verse 7, is really interesting. It says, their justice and dignity go forth from themselves. This is interesting because it has the idea that the Chaldeans would become so powerful that they would literally be able to make up their own code of justice. And in their own minds, and they would exalt themselves as the arbitrators of what is just and fair. In other words, God would allow this enemy to become so powerful that they literally say, hey, we're calling the shots here. We're the ones that decide what's moral and what's not. We're the ones that decide justice, and we're the ones that decide what dignity is, and so therefore we can do whatever we want to do. This is like the ultimate bully, right? Not just, hey, put a piece of wood on my shoulder, I dare you to knock it off, but I'm going to come, I'm going to terrorize you, I'm going to take your things, and in our way of thinking, this is right, so it's right, and you have to agree with it. We're going to come, take your things, make the rules, and we're going to decide what justice is. An awful thought. And God said, yep, this is what's going to happen. And they're not going to leave their enemies with dignity. They'll decide what dignity is. And they're going to come quickly, verse 8. Their horses are swifter than leopards, more fierce than the evening wolves. Their horsemen press proudly on. And their horsemen, their horsemen come from afar. And they fly like an eagle, swift to devour. They are described here as having an incredible military might and strength. The horse and the chariot meant an enemy or a nation that had great military strength and power. And God says, this power is coming to my people. And these people are going to have incredible strength and might. And they're going to come quickly. And they're going to catch all their enemies by surprise. And they're fiercer in their anger than any prowling wolf. If you've ever seen movies or even animated cartoons, Disney movies, where the wolves come for the particular victim, and they're growling and their teeth are bared and they're drooling and all these things. It makes an impression when you see that. And God is saying here, this enemy is going to provide more terror and be more fierce than a wolf, a pack of wolves surrounding you or at your door. That's going to be how terrifying this enemy is going to be. And they are going to endure. and they're going to be arrogant. That last part, they fly like an eagle, swift to devour, that they would come swiftly on horses. God's people didn't have access to horses or even camels at this point. So the picture of someone on a horse was someone that was moving very quickly and they couldn't get out of its way. And that picture of an eagle, that they would be able to fly overhead and know what's going on with their enemy before their enemy could see them. You know what I thought as I was studying for that as well? An eagle swift to devour. You could kind of equate that to drones and missiles today, couldn't you? As God's people still face that kind of thing. And yet, whether it's his people today or his people in Old Testament times, God is reminding us, this is all a part of my control. It's all a part of what's in my hand. I am behind all of these things. So the picture of an eagle flying overhead, ready to devour the enemy at a moment's notice. And God's people, as the picture continues here, Habakkuk said, or God says to Habakkuk, God's people will see severe judgment coming to them quickly. In his timing. And so as terrible as this may have sounded to Habakkuk, folks, at the same time, I think that God's people, even today, this may sound strange. But I think this could be a great hope to us in the truths that are mentioned here. That we look around the world today and question why evil is allowed to be successful. And even why we have such brokenness in our world. Why do we have such brokenness in our world? Ultimately, it was man's choice through the fall. God gave man a paradise, and man chose his own way, and everything's been broken ever since. And man has rebelled against God ever since. And we've struggled with sin ever since. And so these worldwide atrocities that happen to mankind are a result of man's sin. But we have to remember, first and foremost, God gave us a paradise and we broke it. And yet God will continue to work his great plan regardless of that. So as we look at this broken world, don't many times, and we have people, as we talk to people, that many times are not believers, and they'll say, well, how can a good God allow evil to happen? And that's always a question where it's like, oh, what do I say to that? Because I'm not even sure I have the answer to that. Why does God allow people like Lenin and Stalin and Hitler to kill so many people? Why does God allow some forms of genocide? All these questions we can wonder many times. And then we have many arrogant figures who, if God allowed, could actually, we hear this sometimes in world history and sometimes in politics. Sometimes among believers, we see someone that's so arrogant and so powerful that rises and we think, oh, I wonder if that's an antichrist. Why would God allow people like that to rise and be arrogant and bring hurt and destruction to the people of the world? Again, all of this is primarily a result of man's rejection and rebellion against God. But folks, God is not sitting up in heaven being surprised or concerned or wringing his hands saying, I don't know what I'm going to do about that arrogant leader. I don't know what I'm going to do about those people or that nation that has turned from me and is not worshiping me. No, all of these, regardless of how fearful and cruel all of world leaders or any of world leaders today or in past history are and the devastation that they have wrought, we need to remember, this is our great hope, is that they are all in the end merely pawns in the hand of God to accomplish what he wants done. God doesn't want to see us in pain. God doesn't want to see us hurting. But he knows many times he has to allow these things for his purposes to draw us closer to himself. And that is our great hope. And it's also a great hope, too, to be reminded that because all nations and all leaders are under God's control, is that those that perpetrate evil and twist God's justice, they won't ultimately get away with it. Because God in his timing will deal with all of these things and all of these evil people. And God is about to do that with his people of Israel that Habakkuk is ministering to. And he's going to actually allow this terrible, cruel nation to wipe out or to take his people into captivity three different times, eventually, if you remember your Bible stories, in three different captivities, exportations. The people of Israel and of Jerusalem would be moved to a far, beautiful, powerful city called Babylon. And they would be away from their homeland for many years. And God was going to allow that not to be mean and cruel because he had it. And he would sing then to Habakkuk, "You see, I can be more angry and cruel than all of these people. You just watch." That's not what God was communicating here. But he's saying is that, Habakkuk, I will deal with the sins of my people, and it may be extreme, it may seem extreme to you, but it will draw them back to me, and it will remind them that I am their one true God, and that is why I do these things. And that is the hope. We'll continue on here in verse 9. Be astounded at the power of God's work, because God's work would powerfully affect his people. Verse 9, they all come for violence, all their faces forward. They gather captives like the sand. These Chaldean, these Babylonian armies would come from afar. They would have a plan for violence. God is saying here, these people will plan ahead to do violence to my people. They have a plan for how they're going to be most effective. And their faces forward, they're going to be eager to carry this out. And they will be successful. And they will literally carry my people across the sands to a place called Babylon. God says, I'm going to allow this. It will powerfully affect my people. They'll be swept into captivity. They'll be subdued, destroyed, and taken prisoner. God's work would then subdue his people. Verses 10 and 11. At kings, they scoff. Remember, this is the Chaldeans, the people that would ultimately be the Babylonians. At kings, they scoff, and at rulers, they laugh. They laugh at every fortress, for they pile up earth and take it. Then they sweep by like the wind and go on, guilty men whose own might is their God. Is describing here that these Chaldean armies are not intimidated by other nations or kings. They're going to be the next world power, is what God's describing here. And so they deride and belittle. Literally, he's describing here as this army being so powerful that it makes fun of all authority and power of all other kings. What are you going to do to us? They will treat other rulers with mocking and derision. In that word, they laugh at every fortress, for they pile up earth and take it. Literally, they sweep in and take whatever they want. They look at the fortresses of other people, and they're merely games and amusement for them. Oh, look at those strong walls, and look at that tower. Well, this is going to be fun to defeat and subdue these people. This is just going to be another game to us. Let's go, guys. Let's have fun. This is child's play. And they'll sweep in and take whatever they want. And they will be guilty. Verse 11, guilty men. They'll be guilty of war crimes, but nobody's going to be able to stop them. So it's like they say, what are you going to do to us? This is our time. Brazen and confident. And then finally the description to top it all off at the end of verse 11, whose might is their own God. They're so arrogant, they worship themselves. They worship their own power and their own strength. And God says, because Judah's sin, that the prophet Habakkuk, that you're concerned and you're lamenting over, I see my people's sin. And I will actually allow them to be subdued by an enemy that worships its own power, that doesn't even acknowledge that I exist. Well, whatever Habakkuk was expecting, that answer wasn't it. I spent, I've given you part of my testimony before, but when I was single, Lord drew me to a small Baptist ministry in Central Florida. My parents moved up into that area. I lived with them for a time. I'd lived in Florida for many years at that point. Hurricanes were a common occurrence. And you prepared for them and you got ready for them and you prayed while they went through. But actually, when I was living in Central Florida, a place called Winter Garden, Florida, during that time, we had something a lot different. We actually had a tornado come through, which is very uncommon in Florida. And it didn't come till the last minute, which is, you know, you can track hurricanes. You can know days, sometimes weeks in advance that they're coming, right? A tornado just comes through, and it's shock and awe. It's just total surprise and dramatic initial impact. And I remember listening on the news and going to sleep that night knowing that this tornado was probably going to go right through our town and hearing, it didn't sound, some people told me that a tornado would sound like a freight train or something like that. Well, for me, it was eerily quiet. I couldn't hear anything at all. It was strange. I thought, well, maybe the tornado missed us. Praise the Lord. Got up the next morning and started getting phone calls from my church family and come to find out that the tornado had gone directly through and it hit our little town of Winter Garden, Florida, and that our folks needed help and encouragement. So I quickly got ready. Obviously, we didn't have school that day, and there was no need to go in to church to the office for ministry. The tornado hadn't hit the church, but it had hit just a few blocks down. And so I visited some of these families, and I remember going to one family in our church. They were just totally astounded, and they were just shocked. And they were just kind of moving around like they couldn't believe as part a large tree had caved in part of their roof, and they were looking at what needed to be done and the destruction around them. Went to another older lady who was the grandmother of some of the teens in our church, and she had gone to bed. She didn't even know that a tornado was coming, and the tornado came through and knocked a huge limb onto her house and literally over her bedroom roof, and it caved in, and somehow she miraculously was still in her bed. It missed her bed, but she couldn't even get out of her bedroom and had to have her family come and extract her from her own room. And I continued to look around the community, and especially this area where there are mobile homes and things, just houses totally flattened and destruction everywhere. And I was amazed and astounded at the power of creation. I ultimately realize God ordains, and this is God's hand, and God is in control of all these things. As powerful as a tornado is, God is even more powerful than that, and it was amazing to me to behold. And Habakkuk's looking at this vision, and it's amazing to him to behold, and he's literally caught by surprise by God's response. And look at verse 12 and 13. It's pretty much he's saying, God, whatever I expected you to say, it wasn't that. Verse 12, are you not from everlasting, O Lord my God, my Holy One? We shall not die. God, we're your people. You're not going to do that to us, right? O Lord, you've ordained them as a judgment. O Lord, O Rock, have established them for reproof. You who are of pure eyes and to see evil and cannot look at wrong. And he continues. We'll look at that response next week, but I wanted us to end with that because Habakkuk is astounded. God told him, he said, if you want to know what's going on, Habakkuk, I'll tell you, but it'll blow your mind. And it did. Because he thinks to bring cruelty, slavery, and destruction by an evil pagan nation upon your own people. I have a feeling Habakkuk said, sorry I asked, Lord. Can I just take that question back? I'd like to be in ignorance now again where I was before. Let's just forget I mentioned anything at all. But he already knows. And he can't ultimately sink God's promises for his people and that God would still allow them to be carried away by an arrogant, godless nation who doesn't even know God. How can God allow that? And Habakkuk truly is in shock and awe here as he thinks about this. Lord, your people, your righteous nation, you're holy. We talked about holiness in Sunday school the last few weeks and this morning. You can't associate with evil. How can you allow this evil to come and do this to your people? And what we really find here with Habakkuk and many times ourselves, I think what the root problem is, folks, is that when things aren't going the way that we want or we don't understand, what do we tend to do? What are we tempted to do? To demand, really, that God makes sense of what's going on in our life personally, in the life of people in our country, in our world. We tend to want to demand, God, you make sense of this right now so that I understand and that I'm comfortable again. Because I'm not very comfortable right now. Actually, Lord, what you're doing makes me very uncomfortable and I don't like it. And we demand things of God. And that's the one thing that we should not do when we question God is make demands of him. God is going to continue to answer Habakkuk's questions and give him more hope. And so the end of the book is going to be a beautiful praise psalm by Habakkuk. We'll get there soon. But in the meantime, folks, as we look at the wickedness in this world, the brokenness, at the frustrating evil and lack of morality in our own country, and maybe some very hurtful things that are going on in your own life, you can question God, but don't demand of him a certain answer. He may make you wait, or he may reveal to you part of what he's doing, and then when he does that, make sure that you're ready, regardless of what he reveals, to still trust him and say, you are always good. That's faith. Father, we marvel at the wickedness and things that seemingly you allow into our world today and the brokenness and the hurt that you allow to enter into our personal lives many times, and we get hurt and frustrated and angry. Lord, help us to be reminded this morning that you are in control. Part of the reason you don't let us know everything is that we couldn't handle it. It would be too much for us. And that in not letting us know all the answers, you are being loving and gracious to us. At the same time, Lord, when you do start to reveal what you're doing and we question your ways, help us to trust and have faith. And when we doubt, not run away from you, but run to you and call out to you and ask for help, like the prophet Habakkuk did. Lord, let us be a group of people that whatever happens this year in this nation, in this community, that we are strengthened and ready to handle it, not because we are personally strong, but because we are resting and trusting in an all-powerful God that we know has all the answers when we don't. And give us that kind of strength and faith and trust in you when the biggest questions and hardships come. Lord, let us depend on you as our anchor. And ultimately to depend upon Jesus Christ, who gave his life so that we could be cleansed from sin through faith in him and have eternity and home with you forever, regardless of what happens on this broken earth. Father, if there's anyone here today that still does not know Jesus in a personal relationship through faith in him, may today be the day that they trust and that they can have the confidence then that whatever happens to them in their lives and in the history of this nation, that you will hold them and you will keep them fast. Let them trust in Christ and his cleansing blood to deal with their sin and to give them eternity with you when you deal with this sinful world in a final way. Lord, help us all to have faith and trust in you in the midst of all that you're doing in your work. And when we question, to trust and have faith.